All right, we're beginning here 8 lines up from the bottom of Nun Zayin Amud Bet. How Ubda the Hava Mechuza? There was this incident in Mechuza. Mechuza is the city of Rava, the city known for its great wealth, not for its great erudition necessarily, but Rava, who was a great posik, lived there, was the Rav there. Ata Ubein Kochavim, and now a Jew came, Ayla Chanuta de Israel, went into a Jewish store. Amalo Eit Luchu Chamro Lezvune? Do you have wine that you are selling? Amrulei. Look, he said, no, we don't have anything for you. So there was wine sitting in a bucket or a pitcher or a ladle that was at the top of a barrel. So the guy stuck his hand right into it. He moved his fingers around, touched it. What do you mean you don't have any wine to sell to me? Isn't this wine that's sitting right here? Why are you telling me you don't have any wine to sell? Shakle Hayach Biritche. So Hayach, being the owner of the store, took it. Biritche in his anger. Shadya the Dano. He poured it back into the barrel. And so he created a problem for himself because Goy had touched just the wine that was in the ladle, the pitcher, whatever was at the top. And then the Jew, upset at this Goy for having touched it, dumped it back into the barrel. So now he created himself a problem because the whole barrel now has that wine that the Goy touched inside of it. Why he didn't want to sell it to the Goy is unclear here. Whether it's because he didn't want him to touch the Yain or he had some other reason why he didn't want to sell it to him. And the Goy obviously wanted to embarrass the Jewish shopkeeper and show him that there was wine there. He knew that he had wine. And why wasn't he selling him the wine? So he stuck his hand in it to show that there was wine there. Whether he knew that that would cause problems for the Jew, or whether just to show or make sure that he knew that there is wine here and I know that you're not telling the truth. So now the Shaila comes before Rava. Shaya Rava Lizvune the Ubde Kochavim. Rava was matir, this Jewish shopkeeper, to sell the entire barrel to non-Jews. Iflegale Ravuna Barchinina, Ravuna Bered Rav Nachman. Both Ravuna Barchinina and Ravuna Bered Nachman argued on Rava. If you see in Rashi notes over here, below you elu itzlo ba'ir litvakechimo. They weren't with him in the city to argue with him. So they disagreed with him, but they can't face to face argue about it because they weren't there. Napke shipure durava visharu. So the shofarot, which are the trumpeters, basically the psak halacha of Rava, they wanted to advertise it, to get it out in the public. So they used to go out, blow the shofarot, and declare it to the public. So they went out visharu and said that the halacha is that it's mutar. Benavke Shipure, the Ravuna Bar Chininov, Ravuna Bar Rav Nachman, and then the Shofarot, the trumpeters of the other Ravunas, went out to Asrei and said it was a sur, similar to a story that we had back on Daf Mem, where also there was a machloket about what the halacha should be, and similarly over there, the similar story back then where it says, Nafak Shipure, the Rav Asar, Shipure, the Ravuna Bar Chininov, Vishore. So we had a very similar story back there where they had a disagreement. It seems like they were not in the same location and therefore many times they were not able to discuss the matter and they were sending out their representatives to declare the halacha even though it was in opposition to the other persons. So now, Ikla Ravuna Breda Rav Nachman the Mechuza. So now Rashi claims that this happens much later. It's actually a story and then right after the story we're going to have a flashback that tells us the information that we need to know in the interim. The information that you need to know in the interim is that Rava has a discussion with Abaye, and Abaye convinces Rava that he's wrong about what he had said. That's what Rashi says over here. Lachar Zman, that when Ravuna Breda Rav Nachman shows up in Mechuza, that's after some time, Shechazer Bo, that Rava already had retracted his position because Abaye convinced him that he was wrong with his position. So now, Mechuza is where Rava is. Ravuna Breda Rav Nachman shows up there. So now they're finally going to have a face-to-face discussion. Amalei Rava the Rav Yakim Shamei. So Rava says to his Shamash, Rav Yakim, Trok, probably only once. Trok, Gale, Delo, Neto, Inche, Dinitrad. He says, go lock the doors so that nobody can come in and bother us. According to Rashi, he was trying to lock out Ravuna Breda Rav Nachman. Because he was too embarrassed to meet with him because he realized that he had given the wrong psak. And now Rava was already reversing his position. And he didn't want Rav Huna, Breda Rav Nachman, to come in and bother him about this psak. And have to be embarrassed about the fact that he was retracting his position. So that's the way that Rashi reads it. Then al gabe, despite the fact that he had locked the door or closed out, Rav Huna, brother of Nachman, gains access to Rava. Amalei ki haygavno mai. A circumstance like this, what would be the din? He doesn't explain what ki haygavno is, but the way Rashi explains for us is that he asked him a more generic type of question to understand what would be the halacha. He asked him the question, Sheikh Sheikh, Ube Kukhavim Yeno Shah Israel, the goy touches the wine of Israel, Shalo be Kavanat Nisuch, Lo Barat Kukhavim, where he doesn't intend it to be for Nisuch Hayayin, what's the din in that case? Amrlei Asur, Afilu Behana'a. He says, it's Asur, not only is it Asur Beshtia, it's also Asur Behana'a. Veha Marhu Damar Sheikh Sheikh, Eno Seh Yayin Nesach. So now, after he asked him the more generic questions, he presses him about the halacha that he paskin. Didn't you paskin that that wine that belonged to that Jewish shopkeeper was mutar? And so why are you saying well, now it's a sorbana when over there you said it was mutar? He says, Imur da amre ana le bar midame. When I said that, I was saying that to the exclusion of the value of that wine. The value of that wine I never said. So according to Rashi, Rav was covering up for what he really said. The psak that Rav gave was that it was mutar the gamre. Wine of this shopkeeper could be sold to a guy, and it's mutar b'ana through and through, 100%. So now he changed his mind, because we're going to see in a second, and Baye convinced him that he was wrong. Rav Huna b'rei de Rav Nachman shows up and presses Rav about his psak, and then Rav, too embarrassed to say that he reversed his position, basically amends what he said, and said, when I said it was mutar, I didn't mean that it was mutar legamre. I just meant that it was mutar, excluding the value of that wine that he touched. Remember, he touched a certain amount of wine. That wine was pouring into the bigger barrel. So the bigger barrel is fine. It's a tarobit. It's a mixture. And so in that mixture, the mixture is fine. It's just the amount of wine that he put in that is a sorbana. So he basically amends his statement to now fit his new position, and thereby not having to admit to Rav Huna, Breder of Nachman, and be embarrassed that he was retracting or reversing his position. So now we have the flashback story, which tells us why Rav changed his mind. Because, Amar Rav, Kiatai lepumpadita, when I came to Pumpadita, Akfa Nachmani Shmaitata Umatnita, the Asir. Abaye challenged me, or surrounded me, but really means challenged me, with Memrot from Amoraim, and Matnita, and from a Breita, that the psak that I had given was incorrect. Both those cases, they seem to indicate that it's Asur, and I had paskin that it was Mutar. Shmaitata, what was the Memra of Amoraim that challenged Rav's position? Da'u Uvda, da'aba bin Narda, there was an incident in Narda, Va'asar Shmuel, Shmuel, the city of Narda, which is Shmuel's city, he was Osir. Bitiveria, there was an incident in Tiveria, Va'asar Rabbi Yochanan. And over there, Rabbi Yochanan also was Osir. So you have Shmuel in Bavel, in Narda, and Rabbi Yochanan in Eretz Yisrael in Tiveria. Both of them had incidents, which we don't have any information about what exactly the incident was, but it's clear from the context over here that they were similar to the incident of Rava, where you have some sort of yayin, wine that was touched by a goy, not for the intent of nisuch hayayin, and then that wine got poured into something else. In each of these cases, they were oser bahana'a, mamri lei, and I said back to Abaye, the fi she'inan b'nei Torah. The reason that Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan were oser in these cases is not because that's the ikar din, not because the halacha is that way, but rather because those people in the city are not really B'nai Torah, and if we allow them to get Hana'ah from this, they're going to then make mistakes about Stam Yenam and Yayin Nesach in general. So instead of allowing him to follow the Ikar Din and say it's Mutar, they said it was Asur. V'amar Li, and Abaye said back to me, Tveria V'Narda Enan B'nai Torah D'Mechuza B'nai Torah. Wait a minute. Even if you are correct to say that the people of Tveria and the people of Narda needed reinforcement of the halacha, and therefore they passed and it was Asur, not Mikar Din, just because they felt that it would be inappropriate to be Matirit, you who live in Mechuza, in your city of Mechuza, they're clearly not B'nai Torah relative to Tiberia and Nardum. Remember, Tiberia is the city of Rabbi. Rabbi Yochanan's only a generation, two generations after Rabbi. Rabbi had the seat of the Beit Din of the Sanhedrin in Tiberia. Tiberia is a significant Torah center. Narda is also, the city of Shmuel is a very significant city of Torah. Rabbi is challenging Rava and saying, how could you call Tiberia and Narda places that are not B'nai Torah? And then speak about your city, B'nai B'chuza, who are known more for their wealth than for their erudition, and say that they are B'nai Torah. And that's why you were Matir in B'chuza versus they who were Oser in Narda and Tiberia. It doesn't make sense what you're saying. Matznita, the Brita, the Tosefta, that also was a challenge that Abai brought against Rova, is the Agar Demim. So there were these, the way Rashi explains it over here, they were officers of the government office of weights and measurements. So they used to go around and make sure that people were honest in the measurements that they used. And it seems that we, other places, we also see that they actually made sure that the prices were also fair. So it wasn't just that they were checking the measurements and making sure people measured things properly and that they had the proper weights, but also that they, when they sold, the pricing was commensurate with the quality of what they were selling. So there was a gardemim oved kuchavim shekadach b'meneket that drilled a hole into the migufa, which is the seal of the barrel, v'hala, and then he drank from it. O sheta'am minakos, or he drank from a cup, v'chziro l'chavit, and then he dropped it back into the barrel. So this interesting case is either that the tester comes along, drills a hole into the barrel on the side where it's sealed on the top, where there's a soft sealant, and he's able to drill through it, and he put in a hollow straw, and then basically drink from it using the straw to drink from the wine. So then, or the other possibility is that he had a cup that he dipped into the barrel, drank from it, and then dumped it back. So the question of what is causing the problem here is somewhat unclear. Rashi over here seems to said, v'to'im hayayin, he drank the wine, v'nasis sirsur b'nehem. The straw becomes an intermediary between him and the wine, or in essence, it's as if he's touching the wine. The same thing with the coast. When he puts it in, it's as if he's touching the wine. That's one possible problem. The other possible problem is that the wine is being returned to the barrel. It's not that when he drinks it, he's actually touching the wine, but rather when he drinks from the wine, the wine comes up the straw and then goes back down into the barrel. The cup, when he takes it out, he dumps the cup after he drank from it back into the barrel. And so then the problem there is the mixture of the wine with the barrel itself. And in this case, the Breita says in both of these cases, Zaya Masa, these incidents happened, Basru, and they said it was problematic. So these are very similar to Rava's case, in which we see that the Goy came into contact with the wine or touched the wine, and then afterwards dumped it back into the barrel. And here, according to Rashi, it was the Goy who dumped it back into the barrel, although according to the Balei Tosafot, the Ramban and others, it doesn't matter whether it was a Goy who dumped it back or a Jew who dumped it back into the barrel, because it isn't an issue of Maga, but rather that the wine he drank from is now being returned into the barrel. So then it's irrelevant who puts it back in, as opposed to Rashi, who thinks that it's dependent on Maga, and therefore it has to be the Goy that is putting the item in to create the Maga. So now, in this case, it's saying, even though it was unintentional touching, because he touched it for work purposes. He wasn't touching it in order to be menasech the yayin. He was doing it because that was his job. It's not clear here why he had to sip the wine or taste the wine as part of his job of the officer of the government office of measurements and weights. But if he's also setting the pricing or making sure pricing is fair, then he needs to taste the wine to know whether they're charging the right price for this type of wine or this quality of wine. So that's why he was in contact with the wine. But you see here that they were Oser, even though he was involved in his work, and he wasn't necessarily being Menasecher, he wasn't intending to be Menasecher, and yet they were still Oseret. So my lav, Behana'ah. So from the bright, it sounds like it is Asur Behana'ah. And then if it's Asur Behana'ah, that would be in opposition to Rabba's Pesach. He says, lo, bishtia. Rava answers back, no, the only thing the Braita was saying is you can't drink it, but you can get hana from it. And that actually would accord with Rava's psak. If that's the case, the Braita should have used the language of you can sell it then. Kedetani seifa. Because we have an example of that in the latter part of that Tosefta. It says, Karam oved kochavim. So Karam is used in other places in Shas to mean someone who is a person of strong position. Whether it means that he's strong politically or he's strong just because he uses brute force to be strong and he confiscates property. Again, whether that's with government authority or whether that's without government authority, that's generally the person who's the machrim, is someone who takes away other people's property by force. Rashi over here translates it a little differently and says that he's a mishuga. Guy was a little crazy. Ubal mi revolt. And he got into quarrels often, altercations on a regular basis. Umemeher lasot shelo bikavana. And he was very impetuous, impulsive in his behavior. And he used to do things without thinking. So in this case, cherem ovad kochavim, shel shit yado lechavit, stuck his hand into the barrel, ukasavar shel shemini, and he thought it was oil, benimtzeit shel yayin, and he figures out that it was wine and not shemen. Zeya masa, this incident happened, ve'amru imacher, and they said, or they paskened imacher, that he is allowed to sell it, meaning that it's only a servishtia. So you see the Tosefta uses a different language, when it wants to indicate Isur Shtia and not Isur Hana, it uses the term Yimacher. That means in the first half of the Braita, the Tosefta, when it says Asur or Asruhu, it means that they were Oser the Gamrei, not only Vishtia, but also Bahana, and that would be against Rava's position. Now, even in Rava's amended position, Rava only said that the part that the Goy touched was Asur, not the whole barrel. Over here, the Braita or the Tosefta is saying the whole barrel is Asur. Rashi points out is that later on in the Masechta, we're going to have a machloki between Rabbi Shimon Gamaliel and the Chachamim as to whether when you have a mixture, a tarovet, of stam yenam or yayin nesech and wine, what are you allowed to do in terms of dealing with it? So the Rabbanim believe the whole thing is asur and you can't do anything with it. Rabbi Shimon Gamaliel believes that you can sell it X, the value of the yayin nesech or the tarovet that is there, and we paskin like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, and that's how Rava paskin. Could be that this Tosefta is following the position of the Chachamim, and that would explain why they say Asrua means that they will ser it the Gamrei. And what Rashi points out is you can learn from that which we know about the Rabbanan. If it's Asur the Gamrei according to the Rabbanan, according to Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, that would mean that it would be only Asur that amount that was in the mixture, but the rest of the mixture would be Mutar. But in either case, it goes against Rava's Psak that he said Mutar the Gamrei. And so this is what causes Rava to reverse his position. Abaye has now brought him a proof, both from the Psak Halacha of Rabbi Yochanan and Shmuel against his position. And he's also brought a Braita, a Tosefta, that is against the position of Rava. Combining those two together, now we have a Tiyufta to Rava Tiyufta, we have a strong refutation of Rava's position. And according to Rashi, that's what caused Rava to retract his position. And that's what led to the story. This is the flashback that helps us explain the story of Huna, Breder Rav Nachman, why Rav was embarrassed to see him because he's already retracted his position. And you know that Rav Huna, Breder Rav Nachman, is going to come bother him about it, and he doesn't have to admit that he gave the wrong psak. Tosafot asks your question and says, what was Rav embarrassed about? He made a mistake. We find throughout Shas that people make mistakes, and after they make a mistake, they say, call over their Amora over there, like their announcer, their public speaker. They say to the people, that which I said to you yesterday was wrong, and this is the right halacha. And we find numerous occasions of that, and we find that even Rava himself retracted positions in other cases in Shas. Why is Rava embarrassed to deal with Rav Huna, Breder Rav Nachman? That's the first thing that bothers the Balei Tosafot. The other thing that bothers the Balei Tosafot is the fact that the Gemara is out of order. Doesn't make any sense to bring the stories in this order if the whole thing that caused the problem was that Abaye convinced Rava that he was wrong, and then the incident where Rav Huna Brei, the Rav Nachman, happens afterwards. So why not just bring it in that order? Another thing he mentions is the language in the Gemara doesn't make sense. The way Rashi is explaining it is, Tro Gali, he goes, go lock the door, the Lo Neite Inche, so nobody can come in to Nitra and bother us, and then Al Gabe, and says that after he locked the door, he came in. So he was ineffective at locking the door. It should have said, there should have been some conjunction there in the text that says, despite that fact, al gabe. But that's not there. It sounds like al gabe is not in conflict with the fact that he locked the doors. Therefore, the Balei Tosafot bring a totally different girsa in the Gemara, and that helps to explain the Gemara in this order, but it makes it a totally different situation. He says, V'hacha garsinan b'sfarim yishanim, that there are older sfarim that have this girsa, v'hacha garsinan. V'ikla Rav Nachman le'mechuza. It was not Rav Huna braid Rav Nachman, rather Rav Nachman who went to Mechuza. The significance of Rav Nachman is that Rava is the Talmud Muvak of Rav Nachman. This is his Rebbe coming to Mechuza. Who Rabo shel Rava, and he's Rava's Rebbe. V'holach Rava et slowly show me menu. So when Rav Nachman comes to Mechuza, Rava goes to speak to him in order to figure out if he gave the right psak. V'amalei Rava le Rava Yakim Shmei trog gali, that you should lock the door. Achar shechanes lifnei Rav Nachman. When I go and sit with Rav Nachman and have an audience with Rav Nachman, lock the door. So nobody else can come in and bother us while I'm asking him this question. Rava wants a private audience with Rav Nachman. So he says to his shamash, lock the door so that I can ask him the halacha. And then the interaction between them is the following. So it's ikla Rav Nachman the mechuzah. Amalei Rav the Rav Yakim Shamei Trok Gali, lock the door, so that nobody comes in and bothers us. Al-Gabe is about Rava. Rava went into Rav Nachman. Amalei Ki Hai Gav Namai. He asks him about the case that he had and said, what do you think the halacha is? So Amalei Rav Nachman says back to Rava, Asur Afilu Behana, that it's Asur Afilu Behana, which is against the psak of Rava. Vaha Amar Hu the Amar. And now Rava, who's addressing his Rebbe Rav Nachman, says, didn't you paskin Damar Sheikh Sheikh Enosei Yayin Nesech, that when the goy touches it, it doesn't make it into Yayin Nesech? He was basically extrapolating from a din that he had seen Rav Nachman paskin. And in Rav Nachman paskin, in a case where goy unintentionally touched the wine, that it was Mutar Bana. So Rava says to him, I paskin based on what I saw from you. And Rav Nachman says, back to Rava. Imer Damrei Ano the Barmi Dmei Dahu Chamra. When I paskin that it was Mutar Bana, that was the wine, excluding the part of the wine that was the Dmei Yayin Nesech, or the wine that it was touched. Dmei Dahu Chamra Miamre. I never said about that wine. So then, Amar Rava Kiata the Pumfadita, and then you have the story with Abaye. But in that way, first of all, Rava is not embarrassed. He now retracted his position because Rav Nachman basically told him that his understanding was incorrect. And then you have the story with Abaye, where Abaye also challenges Rava's psak. But Rava already has heard from his Rebbe Rav Nachman. And Rava, in trying to defend it or explain the position, Abaye shows him that there are others that also seem to indicate otherwise. But in that way, you solve many of the language problems, as well as the problem as to why Rava was embarrassed about retracting his position, as well as the order of the Gemara. Now, this part of the first part of that Gemara doesn't assume the case of Abaye, or knowing about the case of Abaye, which comes afterwards, because Rava was speaking to his Rebbe, Rav Nachman, and then he's speaking to his colleague and peer, Abaye, and both of them tell him that his psak was incorrect in this case. Now, there still are problems, obviously, with the Balei Tosafot's pshat, including, why is he defending his old position against Abaye, if his Rebbe, Rav Nachman, already told him that it was incorrect. But in that way, he solves some of the problems that are raised against Rashi's explanation of the Gemara. Alright, so that's one thing the Balei Tosafot do. The second thing the Balei Tosafot point out about the straw case, where the Agar Damim put the straw in, he says, Perish Rashi, Vikasha, the lama li hela. Then in the case where he put the straw in, why do we need him to drink from the barrel in order for it to be asur? Just the placement of the straw in should be problematic, because kevin shenaga. By putting the straw in, he's ending up touching the wine, ayadei davar acher, through a medium, but he's still touching the wine. So why does he have to drink from the wine at all? So it says, the lo domi hai klau, the madudo bikaneh. This is very different than the case we're going to see later on in the Mishnah, where he comes to use a measuring stick and sticks it into the wine. So there he has no intent of moving his fingers or touching the wine in that way. Over here where he intends to drink it, and he puts the straw in and touches the wine, litzer bahana, should be asur bahana, even if he has yet to drink from it. So the nira perish Rashbam b'shem Rashi, and therefore the Balei Tosfot think that the Rashbam's explanation in Rashi makes more sense as to what was going on with the straw over here. So we have Rashi on our Gemara here who explains us that's a problem of negiyah, that you're actually touching this thing. Rashbam b'shem Rashi explains that when the process of fermentation begins inside the wine, then the wine also gives off gases in that process. Those gases cause the wine to bubble and puts pressure in the barrel. What ends up happening is that tisisa, that bubbling on the top, sometimes causes the wine to overflow from the barrel or put pressure inside the barrel and causes the wine to drip out of the barrel. So what they used to do was they'd put in a straw to be the release valve for the pressure that's inside the barrel during the fermentation process. That would allow the bubbles or the gases to escape and not have the wine then pressure it and come out of the barrel. What they used to do is, he says, Beta Batsir, at the time of the harvest, when they put the grapes in there and they make the wine, and they are now allowing it to ferment, Verosho Chutz Lechavit, they put in a straw that's outside the barrel. So yain tosis volo derech hanekev inu nofel lekarka. It goes up the pipe and allows the pressure to escape that way and doesn't flow out of the barrel. Ulachar shegamars tisisato. After that beginning of the fermentation process ends and you don't have the gases being released, they slice the piping even with the migufa, with the seal around the barrel, and then they plug the straw. So they don't pull the straw out. They leave the straw in. They cut it at the flush with the barrel's top, and then they cement it or they seal it back in so there's no opening anymore. And so then when they want to reopen it, all you got to do is pull the straw out a little bit, or you just poke a hole where you sealed it up in the straw, and then that allows it to open up again or be drinkable. So now, how do you get the wine out at that point? The straw is already in. He's not being able to get through the straw, so there you have to be motzeis. There you have to suck on the straw to pull it out. And that's why the Gemara specifically says that he sucked on the straw, or he brought it up through the straw, because the straw was already there. He didn't put the straw in. According to the way Rashi has it in our Gemara, he put the straw in, and that's the problem. Whereas over here, the problem is that the straw already exists. He's now drinking through the straw, and that's what the problem says. Mi'u, im nafshecha noted amid perish Rashi. If you really want to hold with Rashi's pshat, the way that Rashi writes it in our Gemara, nemar shekein kederech shekadach shlo nagah kana b'yayin, that when he put this straw in, the straw didn't go deep enough to actually touch the wine. Shirota lo tayayin mitzadei dechavit, that when you then want the wine to come up the straw, you have to tip the barrel, adjegia yayin b'menekin, until the wine reaches the straw, v'lekach tzarich ha'ala. And that's why you need to drink or pull the wine through, because the wine is not touched by the straw. It only happens when he tilts the barrel over, then it touches the wine. At that point, the straw is already in, and that's why he needs to suck on the straw to bring it up. So Tosafot gives two explanations in Rashi's pshat. One based on Rashi and our Gemara, which is that he's actually putting the straw in. The straw never touches the wine, and that's why it's not a problem of the gi'ah. And that's why only after he sucks on the straw does it become problematic, and he has to tilt the wine towards the straw. You always have that. When you have a straw that's in something and the liquid moves or it's now too low to reach the straw, you have to tilt the cup in one direction to make there enough liquid that you can take it out. Similarly over here. Or the Rashi that the Rashbam brings is that the straw was already there as a pressure valve from much earlier, and then they slice it down, and then when he comes, he reopens that straw and now sucks down the straw to bring it out, because otherwise there's no nigiyah through the straw because the straw already exists in the barrel. Those are the two explanations over here. Right now, the Gemara brings another case law, and as you'll note here, that much of this parak involves case law and incidents that they have. And similarly, even the Balei Tosafot are speaking about many times incidents that took place for them and how they dealt with their, what was the psak halacha based on this, which is both from the perspective that the Balei Tosafot and the people in their locales were involved in winemaking. And therefore, this was very much halacha the maaseh, as well as the fact that the Gemara is bringing case law, and she's trying to figure out how similar are these cases to each other, and what are the implications of those cases to our times. That's what the Balei HaTosafot are doing in many occasions. That's why you see very large Balei HaTosafot over here, because this was really a halacha lemaaseh and very, very relevant to them on a daily basis. So now they bring another case, which is Rabbi Yochanan ben Arza and Rabbi Yossi ben Nohurai, Riyatvu v'kashatu chamra. They were sitting and drinking wine together. Ado gavra, some guy was passing by. Amrulay, they said to him, Tashkeinan, why don't you pour us another cup of wine? Why don't you pour some wine for us? The butter, the rum of the castle, after he poured the wine for them, Igle Milto Dove Kochavimho. Turns out he was not Jewish. They had no idea. When they had asked him to come and pour the wine, they thought he was Jewish. Turns out he was a non-Jew. Chadasar, Afilu Be'ana, one of them refused to drink it, but not only to drink it, he thought the wine was now Asur Be'ana. Chad Shari, Afilu Be'shtia, one of them said it was Mutar, not only Mutar Be'ana, but even Mutar to drink. Amar Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, Mandasar Shapi Asar. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi says, the one who says it's Asur, makes sense that he says it's Asur. Mandashari Shapir Shari, and the one who says it's Mutar, also makes sense. Let me explain to you each of their positions. Mandasar, Meimar, Amar, the one who says it's Asur, this is what he says. Salka date, derabonon, kihani, shechra kashatu? Rabbanon of this stature, they're gonna be drinking beer? Beer is not for people of stature. Beer is for the common folk. Or it could be that that was a distinction between Bavel and Eretz Yisrael. In Bavel, they drank beer. But in Eretz Yisrael, where this story takes place, Rabbanon are definitely drinking wine. Elevade haichamru. So the goy in his mind is thinking they must be drinking wine. Menasche. And therefore he was menasechet. Therefore he had intent to be menasech. Uman deshari, shapir shari, the one who says it's mutar. It makes sense that he makes a mutar. Mei ma'amar, he would say, Salkadatcha d'rabonon kihane chamra kashatu. He says, could it be possible these chokhamim are drinking wine? V'amar le'le didi tashkinan. And they're telling me, a goy, to come and pour the wine for him. He knows that a goy can't pour wine for a Jew. So there's no way that these chokhamim are going to be asking him to pour wine. Elevade hashikrahu de kashatu. Must be that they are drinking beer. Below Naske, and therefore he had no intent for Nisu. The Gemara is trying to work what's in the mind of this individual who they asked to pour the wine from. He's clearly not Jewish. And now he has to make certain suppositions about why the Chachamim are asking him to pour for them. So the one who says that Asur thinks that it's because this Goy figured out that they're drinking wine. And if Rabbanan of stature, they don't drink beer, they drink wine. Then this is for sure wine, and therefore he's going to do some nisuch. Now, even though the chachamim were sitting right there, and they're watching him the whole time, what Rashi notes over here is that they were not on guard. That is because they thought he was Jewish. And in thinking that he was Jewish, they weren't worried about him doing anything untoward. So they didn't pay such close attention to him. And that means that now, when all of a sudden they figure out it's a goy afterwards, they didn't pay such close attention before. It's very possible that he did some small nisuch hayayin or some small shikshuch. That would have made it problematic. And that's why it should be asur. Not only b'shtiyah, but even b'hana'ah. So that's according to the Mandasar. The Mandashori says that what's going through the mind of this goy is, he knows that Rabbanan are not going to allow him to pour wine for them. And so the only way that they would allow him to be pouring this right now is if it was beer and not wine. Even though that's counterintuitive, because Rabbanan don't usually drink beer, they usually drink wine. But it has to be beer in this case, because otherwise they wouldn't have asked me. That means in his mind, whatever he's pouring, it's beer. If he doesn't think it's wine, there's no way that he's going to be menasech, because he doesn't know it's wine. And therefore, not only is it mutar bana, it's also mutar b'shtia. Where it says, v'akachazi. Doesn't he just look at it and he'll know if it's wine or beer? They look very different. So, b'leolio, it was at night where he couldn't discern. V'akamarachle, he could smell it. The fragrance of a wine is very different than that of beer. And you can smell the difference between them. He would have known if it was wine or beer. Marseille's becharato. It was newer wine. It was not aged wine. And therefore, the smell wasn't so strong and he wasn't unable to discern between the beer and the wine. Va'ka noga be minatlo. Isn't there a problem that he ended up touching the wine? So whether you like it or not, in the end, he actually physically touches the wine. Now, the way that we have the Girsa in our Gemara, this has huge implications, is that the natla is a utensil that's mentioned in other places generally associated with netilat yadayim. That's why it's called netilat yadayim, because you take a natla, and the natla is the utensil you use to wash your hands. Here you have a natla, which is either some sort of, whether it's a ladle or small cup or small item that they use to draw the wine out of the barrel. So they did that, naga bebe natla. That means that he's in contact with the wine, even if it was unintentional, he's still in contact with the wine, and that should be asur. So the way that our Girsa reads, and this is the way that Rashi reads it, is that he has the natla in his hand, and he's shu'ev yayim me'achavit. He draws wine out of the barrel, b'kli shishmo natla, with this utensil called a natla. Parecha naga be'bechamra ayidei natla. Through the natla, it's not a direct touch of the wine, it's an indirect touch of the wine, which is that he's dipping the natla into the wine, and that indirect touch is considered to be as if he touched the wine. Shelo bekavana, unintentionally, v'asur. And generally we believe that even if he touches it unintentionally, it is still asur. Lo tzricha dekam morik orike. It's a case where he is pouring it out. He never came into contact with the wine. He did not dip the ladle in. He did not dip the natla into the wine to draw it out. Rather, he lifted up the wine barrel and poured the wine barrel. So he never touched the wine physically. It's a case where it's his strength, quote unquote, meaning that he's causing the wine to move, but he's not in direct contact with the wine, but it's unintentional. And these two things combined together, the Rabbanan will not go there. That is, in a case where it's kochol, in a case where it's his strength that's causing it to happen, where he's not in direct contact with the wine, shalobi kavana, where it's unintentional, where he does not know that it's yayin. That's why the person was matir over here. He says that the chachamim must be drinking beer, because they wouldn't let me pour wine for them. And then he thinks he's pouring beer. So not only is he not in contact with whatever liquid is there, because he's pouring it out of the barrel directly into the cups, but he also has no idea what's in the barrel. He thinks it's a beer. Those two combined together make it that the Rachamim were not guzer in that situation. So here we have a halacha that derives from this, which is a very important halacha, which is that the way that the Gemara reads over here is that the contact happened through an intermediary item. Rashi says that the cup touched the wine, shelo bekavana, without intent. And that's the case over here. If you go back to the Baal Yad Tosafot, back on Nun Zayin Amud Aleph, the Baal Yad Tosafot back on Nun Zayin Aleph think that that is the incorrect reading of the Gemara. And that's based on what you had mentioned before about the lulav, the tip of the lulav that had touched the wine unintentionally. And he says, the way that the most of the girsot of the Gemara there read is, that the tip of the lulav touched the wine unintentionally. And Tosafot concludes on Nzayin Amud Aleph, the fear gives a zoo, that means that we are now equating the touching of wine through an intermediary item to be equated with the goy touching it directly. But over here, since it was unintentional, that's why they were matirit behana'a. But that means that they equate the goy touching the wine to the goy touching it with another utensil. And then the Baal Yad Tosafot asks later on in that Baal Yad Tosafot, Fakasha lefize chada the davar temo lomar de chashvina mago ayadei racher to lavi ela shlo bekavana kamo mago begufo shlo bekavana lestor bishtia kol achalok mochigo de kaman de shuri af bishtia. He says it doesn't make any sense that the contact of the goy unintentionally with the wine should be identical when he touches it directly versus when he touches it through an intermediary item. He says that the halacha later on proved to us that it's even mutter to drink it when he touches it through another intermediary item. One of the proofs he brings is from the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that if the guy goes to measure the wine with a measuring stick and sticks the stick in, that does not make the wine asur. Because he was unintentional, he's not trying to drink it, he's not trying to come into contact with the wine, he simply wants to measure it. And he never touched the wine, he did it with a measuring stick. Therefore, the Baal Yad Tosafot believe that the cases that we're speaking about where there's a problem, it's only when the goy comes into direct contact with the wine, then we have a problem. If he came into contact, shalobi kavana, that's where it's a sur bishtiyah, maybe mutar bana. But in a case where he touches it through an intermediary item, and it's unintentional, it'd be mutar afilu bishtiya. But he has a little bit of a problem, because the girsa of the Gemara over here and other places seem to be that he touched it, like in our case, through a cup that he put into the barrel to draw out the wine. He says, "Lukach nir l'Rabbeinu Tam, girsa l'Rabbeinu Chananel, halachot gedolot." So here the Rabbeinu Tam says the Girsa and the Gemara and Zayin Amid Aleph should be like the Rabbeinu Chanano, the Bahak, and the Gonim. Lo Goris Bereisha Luliva Ela Naga Bechamra. Doesn't say that it touched the tip of the lulav, touched it, but rather he touched the wine. Well, the Hachi Aser Le Rav Bishtiyan. That's why Rav said it's Asur to drink it. He's actually touching the wine. Ula Kaman. In our Gemara over here, this tells what is important. He says, "Lo goros v'haka noga benatlo." The Gemara is not going to, doesn't say that he touched it with the cup when he was drawing it out of the ladle. Ela v'haka noga be. He touched it when he went in to dip the cup in. He actually touched the wine, or when he put the ladle in, he touched the wine directly, and that's why they wanted to say that it's a sur. V'chein pasuk Rabbeinu Tam halacha l'maaseh. And based on this, the Rabbeinu Tam comes to a psak halacha. The mago v'ikochvim David Daracher, the goy touches the wine with through another object, shelo b'kavanat maga, where he doesn't intend to touch the wine or come into contact with the wine, mutar b'shtia, that it's mutar b'shtia. It's a huge nafkamina as to what you think the girsa in our Gemara is over here, based on that Tosfot back on Nun Zayin Amid Aleph. Rashi over here says that it's a touching of the wine through the natla. And that's how Rashi explained the Gemara back on the Zayin Amid Aleph. Rashi thinks that when you use an intermediary item to touch the wine, even if it's unintentional, it's the equivalent of him touching the wine directly, unintentionally, and it's a sur. As the Baal Tosfot say, you have to differentiate between the goy touching the wine itself versus a intermediary item touching the item itself. And that's why he says over here, the Gemara should read, and you can see that a little bit in the Tosfot. He says, "Anoga be benatla." He touched the wine binatla when he put the natla in, because that's the gusa that the Rabbeinu Tam suggested, which is that it's not, the problem is not the natla, the problem is that he actually touched the wine when he went in with the natla, he actually touched the wine itself. And that's why shloba kavanah means asur. Had it been that he only put the cup in and never touched the wine, according to Baal Tosfot, since it was unintentional, in this case he had no idea it was wine, then it would have been mutar bishti'ah. That's a huge nafkamina. We see the Rabbeinu Tam paskan alocha based on his view that the touching of a wine unintentionally through an intermediary item does not make the wine a sur at all. It's actually mutar bishtiyar. Right, the other thing the Baal Tosfot point out over here, so Tosfot asks, according to the one who says it's a sur over here, says, "Elavadai haichamrahu v'nasche," that the guy knows that it's wine, v'nasche, and therefore he pours it out. And Rashi writes over here, "Vafagabdu mitminenta morikorike," even though at the end of the Gemara here, we set it up, that's the case where he's pouring out of the barrel, which means that he never touched it. So then, how could he be menasech it? Afilo achi chashinon dilma noga menasach. We're worried about the fact that while he was pouring it, maybe he touched some of the wine, and that's why it's considered to be nisukayayin, which means that we are giving precedence to mago, to the contact or direct contact with the wine, versus the pouring of wine in being yayinesech. And that goes against what we know about Yayin Nesek. Isn't that the classic case of Nisuk HaYayin? Nisuk HaYayin in the Beit HaMikdash was they took something full of wine and then they poured it into the Sfalim, into these pipes that were on the Mizbeach. So also over here, when the Goy picks it up and pours the wine out, it doesn't make so much sense to say that that is less problematic than actual touching of the wine. Why should touching of the wine be considered Yayin Nesek or a Chashash Yayin Nesek? And pouring of the wine, which is actually the definition of the word nisuch, not be considered to be a chashash of nisuch hayayin. So the Baal Tosafot gave two answers to deal with this. Yesh lomar, demadu tzrach lefaresh naga, the reason Rashi had to explain that he actually touched it, is hainu lesor ap mash bifnim, shelo yira adayin. That comes to be oser, not only the wine that he poured out, but also the remaining wine that is in the barrel. So had it been that he was just pouring it out and didn't come into contact with the wine, then only the wine that he poured out would have been problematic, but the barrel itself would have remained fine, because we have a principle that whatever is inside the barrel, that is not affected by the goy when he pours it. Only that which exits from the item or the utensil is problematic. So the reason that he wanted to have naga is also to say that that which is in the barrel is also asur. Or, veri perish v'nasche sheiriku bekavanat nisuch. That you can pour something for different reasons. You can be pouring something for nisuch hayayin, or you can be pouring something because you want to put it into a cup. And there's a big difference between them. The verb that is used is different. V'nasche means that he pours it out with intent for nisuch. And that's what the problem is over here. Not that he touched the wine, but he actually poured it out with intent to be mnasech the yayin, and that's what makes it a sur. So he disagrees with Rashi and says that the problem here is not the touching of the wine, but rather the actual pouring of the wine. But it depends on what your intent is. Nasche means that he poured it out with intent to make it yusuf a yayin. Morik or ruke just means that he poured it out in intent to fill the cups, and that's not problematic. So we'll differentiate between kocho, when there's intent for nisuch, versus kocho, when there's simply intent to pour the wine out of the barrel. So Tosafot also makes that point. And now the Gemara says, "Boy mine Rabbi Asi mi Rabbi Yochanan." So Rabbi Asi asked Rabbi Yochanan, "Yain shim misacho bekochavim that was diluted by a non-Jew, mahu? What's the din?" So Amalei, so Rabbi Yochanan asks Rabbi Asi before he even starts to answer the question, "Vema mizago? Why are you using the term misacho when the term to dilute?" In the Mishnah, in the Gemara, is mezago, vimzog. So Amalei, ana kedichtivka mina. I'm using the wording that the Pasuk uses in Mishlei, which is, tavcha tivcha, he prepared the meat, he shechted the meat, mascha yena, and then he diluted the wine. So I'm using the word mitzacho, the verb that it describes the dilution of wine in the Tanakh. Amalei, lishon Torah latzma, lishon chachamim latzma. You can't conflate these types of languages. The Torah, the Tanakh, has its own internal language, and that is used in that context. The Chachamim, the Mishnah, and the Talmud have their language, and the colloquial term for dilution of wine is limzog, to dilute the wine, and not misacho, to dilute it in that way. Now, even though the term is correct, and it means that, but that's only in Lashon HaTanakh. But Lashon of the Chachamim, or the colloquial term today, is mezago, and you need to use that term in order to be understood. Now, the Baal Tosafot point out, it's not true that that's only Lashon of the Chachamim, it's also Lashon of the Tanakh as well. In Shir HaShirim, it says, Ayachser HaMezeg. So over there you see that meziga also means dilution of wine. So you have that not only as Lashon of Chachamim, it's also Lashon of Tanakh. So what the Baal Tosafot note is that there's a difference between mazug, and masuch, which is mazug, is b'yayin atzmo, is to dilute wine with other wine. Aval misichahu tikun mayim b'yayin. On the other hand, misuch is to put water into the wine, is to dilute the wine with water. I think you'd even say it in a different way, is that there are both types of dilution, even with water and wine, but it depends what you're pouring, which is that mezeg is to pour the wine into the water, and misich is to pour the water into the wine. And over here you can see that the situation of the case here is where he's pouring the water into wine. And that's why Rabbi Yochanan says to him that you need to use the word mezago, which is Lashon HaChamim. It's not the Lashon of the Tanakh. Lashon of Tanakh, when it talks about mezek, it's talking about pouring the wine into the water, or diluting wine with wine. That's why he doesn't quote Tanakh, but he says Lashon HaChamim, that mazug is what the equivalent of misicha is in the Tanakh, and you need to use the proper term in order for people to understand what you're saying. So my, what's the din? Amalei, asur. It is asur, but it's not asur mi'ikar din. Mishom leich leich amrinan nizira. We say, go, go, nazir. Skor, skor, go around, around. The karma loti grav. Don't get close to the vineyard. So a nazir who took a neder nizirut is asur in wine products, in grape products. He's mutar. He's allowed to walk through a vineyard. There's nothing wrong inherently with him walking through a vineyard. The problem is that there's too much temptation in that situation. If he walks through the vineyard, he might just pick off a grape and eat a grape, and then he'll violate his neder nizirut. So what we say is, take the precaution to avoid problems that could come up. Walk around the vineyard. Don't walk through the vineyard. Is that something that's asur under his neder nizirut? No. But we still say to him, take the precaution, make the efforts to prevent yourself from getting into trouble, and walk around the vineyard. So that's an expression that the Gemara uses whenever it wants to speak about an institution, the Rabbanan, that's there to protect against a possible violation that would be more problematic. Is that what he says over here? We don't allow the goy to dilute the wine on behalf of the Jew because of what might come of that. So it's not that it's asur inherently. You're right. There's nothing wrong with it. It's kocho of the goy over here. And he's also pouring the water into the wine. So there should be no problem at all. Nevertheless, we say it's asur because of a preventative measure. Now Rashi over here says, what does it mean it's asur? Alpha gav delo nogo. Even though he never came into direct contact with it, so the Karabanim were gozer in this case by kocho to make it a survishtia, shem hachakat aveira, to stop him from engaging aveira. Aval, behana'a vadei lo mitzar. It's definitely not osur b'hana'a. The law adif minigia yedei davar acher shelo b'kavana. It's no worse than a case where you touch through an intermediary item, shelo b'kavana. Ki ha'u denoga b'lulavita. Like the case of Levita before, Bechamra, Vesharia, Rab, Behana. Over there, Rab said, Vesasur, Vishtia, Mutar, Behana. This is Rashi, the Shita Tov. So that's the case over there when you're touching through an intermediary item. And over here, this should be no worse than that when he's pouring the water into the wine. That's Ayyadei Davar Acher. He's not really touching the wine directly. And therefore, there should be no Isra Anan over here, only an Isra Shtia. But if you look in the Balei Tosafot, bring Sur, Af behana, that it's a sur, even behana. So it sounds from the Balei Tosafot to say it first, that it sounds like it's a sur behana. Then they bring a Perush Acherim for Rashi that says it's mutar behana. That's actually the Rashi that we have in front of us. And Rabbeinu Tam is masking that the Isur that Rabbi Yochanan is suggesting over here is an Isur Shtia, not an Isur Hana. And now we're going to see numerous other individuals that say the same thing. Rabbi Yirmiya, Ikla the Savto. Yirmiya went to Savto. Chaza Chamra the Mazge Obey Kuchavim the Ishte Israel Minei. He saw that the non-Jews were diluting the wine on behalf of the Jews, and then the Jews were drinking. Ve'asalu. And he says that it's Sosur. Mishom Lech Lech Amrina Nizira. Score the Kamra Loti Krav. Again, for the same reasons that Rabbi Yochanan gave that we wanted as a Harchaka. Not that Mikar didn't, it's Sosur. But rather, we're trying to prevent them from coming to something worse. Question is, what exactly it is that you're trying to prevent? So there could be numerous problems here. One of the problems is that we're afraid that if we allow him to dilute the wine, he'll eventually come to pour the wine in to dilute it instead of the water, or touch the wine, which would be a much more serious issue. Or for the problems that we discussed earlier in the Masechta, which is that there's a takana of yeinam mishum benotehem, that there's a restriction against sharing wine with the goy, not only because of the problem of Yayin Netzach, but there's also a secondary problem, which is we don't want you socializing with the Ovei Kochavim, because then your children end up marrying his children, and you run yourself into a problem. So the problem is not only the problem of Yayin Netzach or Stam Yenam, there's also a secondary problem of socializing. And allowing the goy to dilute the wine is definitely going to lead to socializing. So that might be the problem here. That might be what they're trying to prevent. So either way, they are creating a harchaka midrabanan, either to prevent socializing, or it's a harchaka midrabanan that's trying to prevent the possibility of getting into more serious problems if the goy is engaged with the wine. Itmar nami am Rav Yochanan, v'amri lo am Rav Asi am Rav Yochanan, yayin shemizago uvei kochavim, asur mishom, lech lech, amrina nizira, score the karma lo tikrav. So together, another member from Rav Yochanan, or Rav Asi in the name of Rav Yochanan, that says that the reason here is a problem of harchaka. So then in the Balei Tosafot, if you look over here, this is very important, Balei Tosafot, but similar akin to the Balei Tosafot at the end of yesterday's daf in Zion Omud Bet, where the Balei Tosafot discussed their position with regards to the Ovei Kochamim being in contact with wine, which is Katav Ariyaz, Bizman Hazeh. Today, this is in the time of the Balei Tosafot, Ovei Kochamim, Shishikshech, Yenosh Yisrael, Mutar, the Mokhrodo of Dei Kochavim, that a goy who touches the wine of a Jew, you can sell it to non-Jews. Delo b'kiyei b'shichshuch k'dibrishit de'el. Like I said back on Zayin Amud Bet, that big toast at the end of yesterday's daf, I told you already that the shichshuch today, that the goyim today are not really Ovdei Avodah Zarah, and they don't even do Nisuch HaYayin, they don't even know what to do Nisuch HaYayin, and therefore when they come into contact with it, it will be Asur B'shtiyah, but it will be Mutar Bana. That's based on this big Tosafot at the end of the Zayin Amud Bet. So whether we pass him like Rav or Shmuel with regards to Tinok ben Yomo, because they're comparing the case of a goy to tinuk ben yomo and saying that based on that, it should be any unintentional touching is asur b'shtia like rav, but still mutar behana'a. With the following exception, which is very, very interesting, says, that's only if the goy is not intending to cause problems for the Jew, and he's not touching it just to get even with him. The goy is doing it because he knows if he touches the wine, it's going to cause huge monetary loss to the Jew, and he's angry at him, so he wants to get back at him, so he touches the wine intentionally. That's even mutar to drink. Because in that type of case, the rabbanim one goes there in order to make it problematic for the Jew. So we have from Rav Hai Gon that that's also mutar. That even if he touched it with his hand and he was doing only to anger the Jew, then you could drink it. And we have a shala that came up like this. That there was a press of the Jew and the bore, the capture mechanism where all the wine pours down to was full of wine. And a person who was very problematic, confiscator of property, a strong man came along. Stuck his hand right into the bore to get back at the Jew and make him angry. So there was a zakin there who was a big Yerei Shemayim, a big Baal Psak. Shesofa ne'erag al Kiddush Hashem. This elder gentleman was killed al Kiddush Hashem, probably during the Crusader times. V'shamanu, shalakach ben ayayim b'klei v'shatam yimenu v'fnei anas. He took a cup right there, dipped it into the boar, and drank the wine right in front of him. They show you ragil, lasot kein l'Yisrael acher. So that he shouldn't do this again to another Jew, ad kalashon ari. And that's what the Ri suggests over here, that if he does it intentionally to cause problems for the Jew, then it's not effective, because we don't want him, first of all, doing it more often. And number two is that the Chachamim were not gozer in that case. And therefore, there's no loss for the Jew. Not only can he get hana from it, he can even drink from it. But if it's touching of the wine, in other cases, it'll still be mutar bana, but it'll be asur b'shtia. And that all goes back to the Baalei Tosafot's view before, that the goy's touch today is not like that of the goy in the past. It's like an unintentional touch. They don't even do nisuch hayayin. They don't know what nisuch hayayin is. They don't know what shikshuch is. None of that applies to our goyim. They're like a tinuk ben yomo. And therefore it's a sur b'shtia, but still mutar b'ana. That's the view of the Baalei Tosafot, who clearly very makel on this issue. And even though the Rabbeinu Tam later on in that Baalei Tosafot admits that the Ikar Halacha from the Gemara, we don't really have a way to be matir, stam yenam, of Maga Bahana'a, and even gives evidence through his father, Rabbeinu Meir, that he actually was Mafsid B'Yadayim Yayin that was touched by a goy. Nevertheless, he says, Vafu Pikein Lo Ratzah Rabbeinu Tam Le'asor, despite the fact that he doesn't think it may be Mutar Bahana'a, he didn't want to make it a sor, Ho Pashara Minhag. That's here, there was a Minhag already in Bnei Ashkenaz to say it's Mutar Bahana'a, but Nachli Shosh Yu Shogigim Vayu Mezidim. Better that they be shukeg in the matter, not mezidim, because probably the loch is etz asur b'ana. Mikom akom, the samech ha-minhag, in order to bring some support for the minhag, zat rayash, in his nidmeh stam magan, the modei b'kaneh, that their touching of the wine should be no difference than using the measuring stick, because he had no intent for nisuch, therefore he's allowed to sell it. And same thing here, in our magal v'kochavim, who have no intention for nisuch, that it should be fine to sell it or get hana'a from it. But he does note that if there's already a takanat gzirat chachamim, not to get on the af from stam yenom of a goy, how could you be matir stam yenom? He says that the gzera never applied to this case. It's not that they're matir the gzera. The gzera is just not applicable to people who are not menasech yayin. And since our goyim are not menasechim yayin, or they even know what it means to be menasech yayin, therefore they're not included under the gzera of stam yenam. And then he continues, mi ukash stam yenam ech natir ba'ana'a. Having a matir ba'ana'a, because stam yenam is not only a problem because of yayin netzach, but it's also a problem mishum benotehem. And that reasoning is still applicable today. And he says that the extra isur hana'a really comes or derives from the yayin netzach, because we know by pitam and shmanam, where they would go there because of socializing, there they only made it asur ba'achila. They didn't make it asur ba'ana'a. And that would be the same thing over here. Structurally, it would only make it asur b'shtia, not asur b'hana'a. And that's why, based on this, we can give some support to the minhag Ashkenaz that they were matir stam yenam b'hana'a, not b'shtia. And again, the Tosafot concludes that machvir tavola bracha. That the Ramah does bring the halacha, that even by stam yenam, we still say that even though technically stam yenam should not be based on all of this that we're saying, that they don't do nisachayai, they're not really obdei avodah zarah, and all those things combined, stam yenam should not be a sur today. Nevertheless, a machmir tavola bracha, and the Ramah brings that down, that that's our practice, that we are machmir for that, and we treat stam yenam like yayin nesach, even though technically it should be very different. Alright, now, the last case that we're going to do for today, is a case with Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish ikol the Batzra. He went to a city called Batzra. It's a city in the areas of Eretz Edom. Chaz Yisrael dekachle peret lo masre. He saw Jews that were eating peyrot that didn't have chumot or masrot taken off of them. Basarlo, they told him that they were wrong, and they're not allowed to do that. It's a sur. Chazam mayat v'sagde lo ovdei kochamim. He saw that there was a body of water, or it seems to be there was a spring of water that the non-Jews were bowing down to. V'shatu Yisrael, and the Jews were drinking from it. Basarlo. And he said that that was incorrect, and he told him he may not drink from that water anymore. After the Kamei de Rabbi Yochanan, Reish Lakish comes back to Rabbi Yochanan and tells him what happened and what he paskin. Amalei ademik torach alach. While your cloak, or whether it's your turban, something that was an indication of his stature, while it's still on, zil hadar. Go back there and reverse your psak. According to Rashi, and the Baal Tosafot second this, so what he said to him is that before you take off your cloak, before you rest, get back there and tell him that you are wrong in your psak. Now the Baal Tosafot of Shulel reject another view of what this means, which is Ademik Torech, before you lose your cloak, because they're going to come and sue you for the wrongful psak, and when they come and sue you for the wrongful psak, you're going to have to reimburse them, and then you're going to even lose the cloak on your body. Or you could imply Yimik Torech, means that your cloak that indicates that you're a posek or a rabbonan, before you lose it, go and reverse your position because you are wrong about these piskei halacha. The Baal just reject both of those explanations and say that Rashi's explanation over here, which before you rest, go reverse your psak, because he had immunity or was indemnified by the fact that he was a rab that had smicha and appointment as a judge. And therefore, he was immune to those types of suits, and he wouldn't have lost his money. And therefore, he believes that it was just time to go back before you rest and reverse the psak. Betzer, lavainu batzra. Betzer bamidbar, which is one of the cities within Eretz Yisrael, is not the same thing as batzra. And so therefore, you're confusing or conflating the places. Batzra is chutz laretz. Betzer is inside of Eretz Yisrael. Now, even though in the Agadato and Sanhedrin, Reish Lakish himself brings down that one of the mistakes that the Sar Shiromi is going to make is he's going to think that Betzer and Batzra are the same place. So how Reish Lakish over there is saying that he's going to make that mistake, and Reish Lakish himself made that mistake. So the Baal Tosafot point out that's after Rabbi Yochanan corrected him, then Reish Lakish realizes it's a mistake, and he says that's a mistake that the Sar Shiromi is going to make. Then, Umayim Sharabim Einesarim. So we discussed this earlier in the Masechta, that when it comes to public waters, that the people bowing down to it don't have a right to be oser the water because it's not theirs. You can't be oser davar shenu shalom. So here when they're bowing down to the water that belongs to the public, they don't have any right to oser the water, and that's why Reish Lakish was wrong in his psak saying that the water was asur. Rabbi Yochanan the Tameh, Rabbi Yochanan's the Shita Do, Dam Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shua ben Yotzadak. So Rabbi Yochanan says over in the name Rabbi Shua ben Yotzadak, and over here, Tosfo points out, Hachamash Mashay Rabo, that this was the Rebbe, or Rebbe Muvhak, of Rabbi Yochanan was Rabbi Shimon ben Yotzadak, because he quotes him numerous times in Shas, and he shows other reasons, although he brings one case, that would seem to indicate that he was not his Rebbe, where there was an altercation with Rabbi Shlokish. But nevertheless, Tosfo seems to say that he is his Rebbe. Maim Sharabim Einesarim, that if it's public waters, they can't be asur. Had Yoch Einesarim? You're implying here that if it belonged to a single individual, it would be asur. Typically, the hamechubarim ninu. Why should it be that if it's owned by yachid, that it should be asur? They're attached to the ground. And we just went through a whole perek that taught us that Elohim al Harim, v'lo Harim Elohim, that their gods are on the mountains, but the mountains can't be their gods. Things that are attached to the ground, you can't make into avodah zarah. L'tzricha, the tashinu galo. Sometimes the water pops out. Here, galo is like a wave. But sometimes the water detaches, and that's the problem. Masur says, sof sof, avnei harshin nidal galo ninu. It's no different than the rocks that fell off the mountain, which we asked about in the previous parak. And over there, we had a locate over there between Bnei Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Yochanan as to what the halacha is. The stayim, the Rabbi Yochanan, the Mara Surot. Now we know that Rabbi Yochanan is the one who says Asur. Because he's saying here by the water that's separated away from the water body, that it can become Avodah Zarah. And same with the stones that separated from the mountain, they should be able to become Avodah Zarah. Lo, Tzricha, the Tachinu B'yadei. That's the case here where he pulled it out with his hand. He scooped out the water with his hand. In that way, creates a Tfisat Yedei Adam. And that's why it's a Asur over here. And then maybe by the rocks that fall off the mountain, over there there's no human involvement. And maybe Rabbi Yochanan would say that it's Mutar over there and not a Asur. So you can't compare the cases. And that's why Rabbi Yochanan says that it's a Asur over here. The Baal Yed Tosfot point out, and they actually noted it before, it's Arach Lomar, the Mari Kigon, the Nibbe Mehare. That's be a case where the spring came up in his own property, and as Tosafot says, "Amem Zayin Amalav Veinam Yotzim Chutz L'Sadeim," it doesn't leave their fields. So there, you can make it a sur because it's a private owned piece of water. And here, the Baal Tosafot deal with the second issue, which is, isn't one of the Tnaim that Yeshua granted the land to have Eretz Yisrael to the people in the Gemara and Bava Kamma? One of those conditions was that any water flow or water spring would belong to the public at large and not to the individual. So why over here, we all of a sudden assume that if it's a spring in his own property, and therefore becomes solely his ownership. He says, that's only true when it's a spring that springs up by itself, that belongs to the public. If you dig a well, or you go and find the spring, then it's yours and does not belong to the public. Inami, or it's a case where he owns the whole city. It's a privately owned city, and therefore it doesn't matter that the city owns it because he owns the city, and therefore it's under his own private ownership. So that private ownership, plus the fact that it was talush, allows it to become a sur. But then that's why Reish Lakish is incorrect, because over there the goyim were bowing down to the water in general, and therefore it wasn't a sur because it was the water of the rabbim, and you can't make the waters of the rabbim Asurim. Now the Baal Yed Tosafot deal with a very serious issue with regards to what Reish Lakish says over here, which leads to many of the Rishonim bringing up Chilukim to deal with this issue. And that is that Rabbi Yochanan says to Reish Lakish, Batzra is Chutz Laretz, Betzer is Eretz Yisrael. If you're in Eretz Yisrael, you're Mafish Tumot Masrot. If you're in Chutz Laretz, you're not Mafish Tumot Masrot. They are Mitzvot Tzluyot Laretz. The problem is that the Baal Yed Tosafot point out, throughout Shas, that's Mishnayot, and the Gemara, we find that the Chachamim were mafrish Trumot and Masrot, even in Chutz Laretz. And there seems to be a chiyuv of Trumot and Masrot in Chutz Laretz. So just because it's Chutz Laretz, why is it okay that they're not taking off Trumot and Masrot? The Baal Yed Tosafot themselves bring a number of distinctions, which are brought by other Rishonim as well. One distinction is, it's a difference between items that are Chayav Midoraita, and Chayav that are Dirabanan. Dagan, Tirosh, and Yitzhar, which are things that are chayav midoraita and trumot masrot in Eretz Yisrael, they're also chayav, or the rabbanim were mechayev those in Chutz Laretz. The case here with Reish Lakish is a case where it wasn't dealing with dagan, tirosh, and itzar. The Baal Yed Tosafot reject that explanation because, first of all, they show that many of the instances where in Shas they were mafish trumot masrot in Chutz Laretz, even with issues that are the rabbanan, like peirot or yirakot. And also over here, he says that that should have been noted, that was the problem in Reish Lakish's case. But here it just seems to be that he's speaking about items in general, not necessarily items that were not Dagan, Tirosh, V'Yitzhar. Another distinction that's brought by the Rabbeinu Tam is that it's a difference between Vaday and Demai. And that is that when you are Vaday Tevel and Chutz Laretz, you have Mafrish, Trumot, Masrot, Midir Rabbanan. If it's Demai, which is produce of the Am Haaretz, but it's a fake, whether it's Mafrish, Trumot, Masrot, in Eretz Yisrael, Midir Rabbanan, you have to be mafrish anyway again, because we want to be sure that you take off the Trumot and Masrot, Whereas in Chutzar, as when there's Demai, you don't have to be Mafrish at all. It's totally Patur from any Afrasha once it is Demai. And that's what the case was. The case by Rish Lakish, the case of Demai, and that's why it was incorrect in being Osaret to them. Again, the Bayit Tosfot don't love it because they Ikar Chasam and Asefer. Where in the case of Rish Lakish, does it indicate that they were speaking about Demai? The Bayit Tosfot then asks, according to all these explanations, why don't we take off Trumot de Masro today? The fact that we don't take off Trumot de Masro today, Af lo kikule chutz laretz, Omer Rabbeinu Tam, the mekarkot shelanu mishubadatot heim lesarim. The reason is because we don't own our land today. Our land is subject to the landlords or the rulers of the properties. Medina de machutu, shim lo yitneim, shim mishubadot biyad obde kukavim. Umushkaot lo, that if we don't pay for it, and we don't pay the lease or the tax on it, it automatically goes back to the landlord or to the government. The cheinenam shelanu. Therefore, it's not our own land. And since it's not our own land, we can't take off Trumot Masrot. Based on that, he says, Dina Machuta Dina, we don't own the land, you don't have any real property ownership, and based on that, you don't have to give Trumot Masrot. But obviously, we'd have major nafkamino today in places where you can't have real property ownership. But the Re rejects that and says, V'kash in the Re. Kigami Mechachamim, Ayyum Karkao the Taskal. We saw so many cases in the Gemaras, Bab Metzia and Bab Batra, where they had to pay taxes in order to keep their land, and whoever paid the tax got to keep the land. If you defaulted on your taxes, you lost your land. And even at the time of Chachamim, they had the same setup, and yet they were still taking off Trumot and Masrot. That he says, V'yesh l'smoch al divrei Yishami. The Chala, Dom Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Tehnu Shem B'chutz Haaretz, Ayum Afrishim Trumot Masrot, Ad Shebao Arubim U'bitlum. And the reason we don't take off Trumot and Masrot is because of the fact that Yishami says that they were mevatel, the practice of taking off Trumot Masrot, after a certain period of time in Chutz Laaretz. The Bali Tosfot bring from the Re another distinction, which is the areas that were Korov, the Eretz Yisrael. Only places that were adjacent to Eretz Yisrael were Chayav and Trumot and Masrot, and that's because they were afraid if you didn't train the people in those areas to take off Trumot Masrot, and the people in Eretz Yisrael, they would forget when they went into Eretz Yisrael, or it was common for Peirot in Eretz Yisrael to come to those areas, so they needed to know to be Mafrish Trumot and Masrot, and also possibly to disincentivize people from leaving Eretz Yisrael to go to Chutz Laaretz to avoid having to pay Trumot and Masrot. So therefore, the places like Ammon, Moab, Mitzrayim, which were adjacent to Eretz Yisrael, were Chayav and Trumot and Masrot. Places that were further away were not Chayav and Trumot and Masrot, even though it sounds like Batzra wasn't so far away from Eretz Yisrael, and should have been included in that adjacency, but he suggests maybe that was a distinction, and that's why in Batzra they were not Chayav in Trumot Umasrot. And that's why he says we don't take off Trumot Umasrot, but that would open up the possibility that areas that are adjacent to Eretz Yisrael today would still be Chayav in Trumot Umasrot, and that would also open up problems in areas today of Eretz Yisrael where we think that there are Sfekot, or it's not really considered to be Eretz Yisrael, but if it's adjacent, that should be Chayav in Trumot Masrot. So you still would probably need the issue Shalmei to say that outside of Eretz Yisrael, they did not Mechayav in Trumot Masrot. Okay, we're going to stop here, six lines down on the top of Nuntet Amud Aleph.